Fixed income markets have evolved, but most benchmarks haven't. At Janus Henderson, our forward-thinking framework aims to reconstruct past approaches to fixed income by focusing on multiple investor objectives. Learn more at janushenderson.com. Investing involves risk, including the possible loss of principal and fluctuation of value.
This is your tech news briefing for Friday, November 19th. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. Ransomware attacks have become a growing threat to individuals and national security. But cybercrime has been around for ages. To help stop it and track down the criminals, the Secret Service set up a training center in Alabama. Students from around the country head there to learn how to deal with hackers and other cyber threats at a program that looks more like war games than a law enforcement seminar. On today's show, WSJ Pro cybersecurity reporter James Rundle, who got to visit one of those trainings, joins us to discuss how it all works. That's after these headlines. A bipartisan coalition of at least 8 state attorneys general is investigating how Instagram attracts and affects young people. The announcement ramps up pressure on Instagram's parent company Meta, formerly Facebook, which has already been under scrutiny for how it impacts users. The states say they're focused on whether the techniques used by Meta to increase how much young users engage with the platform resulted in harm, and if the company violated consumer protection laws. A Meta spokesman said the investigation is based on a misunderstanding of issues that also affect other social media platforms. Two big makers of video game consoles are pressuring Activision Blizzard to address allegations about how its CEO, Bobby Kotick, handled accusations of sexual misconduct at the game publisher. The WSJ reported on Tuesday that Kotick knew about certain claims of rape and sexual harassment at the company, but didn't inform the company's board. On Thursday, Xbox maker Microsoft said it's evaluating its relationship with Activision. That follows a letter sent by the boss of Sony's PlayStation division viewed by the Wall Street Journal that said Sony didn't believe Activision's statement following the story's publication properly addressed the situation. Activision has called the journal story misleading, and the board issued a statement in support of Kotick. Two big automakers are getting into the computer chip business. Ford says it signs an agreement with U.S.-based chipmaker Global Foundries to develop chips, and General Motors says it's also trying to forge deeper ties with chipmakers. The year-long global semiconductor shortage has hit the auto industry hard, leading to production delays. Our automotive reporter Mike Colias has more.
What you're seeing is car companies had really outsourced a lot of their key components over the last several decades, and now you're starting to see them, because some of these technologies that they had been just sort of ceded to third parties to supply to them have become so important to the future. So like batteries for electric cars is probably the biggest example. Semiconductors also falls into this category. They want to control that part of the supply chain. They want to have the features and content that they think is important. And so they're kind of going backward and vertically integrating when, for years they had sort of outsourced a bunch of this stuff.
And new details on Zillow's decision to close its virtual home flipping or iBuying business. The company, best known for its real estate listing website, bet its future on using algorithms to buy and quickly sell homes. We report that initially the program delivered strong profits, but as the housing market cooled over the summer, Zillow found its algorithm was leading it to buy too many houses for too much money. Our reporter Will Parker explains what went wrong.
This computer model that's supposed to predict what a home price should be both right now and possibly 3 to 6 months from now, you know, that's always been a complicated prospect. Real estate is a lot different than other securities. There are all of these very subjective, aesthetic, even social kind of thoughts and concerns that go into what someone is willing to pay for a house. So that was always a challenging prospect from the beginning. But then you combine that with the events of the pandemic and the way that changed just about everything in the economy, but especially in housing, the decisions people were making about where they wanted to live and how much they were willing to pay. In combination, it just made things even more difficult.
To hear more about Zillow and about Ford's chip deal, head over to our sister podcast, What's News? All right, coming up, going into battle against cybercrime takes training. We'll have the details about how the Secret Service is preparing U.S. law enforcement to track down cybercriminals. That's after the break.
Fixed income markets have evolved, but most benchmarks haven't. At Janus Henderson, our forward-thinking framework aims to reconstruct past approaches to fixed income by focusing on multiple investor objectives. Learn more at janushenderson.com. Investing involves risk, including the possible loss of principal and fluctuation of value.
You probably know the Secret Service as the agency that protects the president, but it also investigates financial crimes, and increasingly, those come in the form of cyber attacks. With that experience in fighting cyber crimes, the Secret Service has set up a training center outside Birmingham, Alabama, where law enforcement from around the country can learn how to deter and catch cyber criminals without having to call in the feds. So, what's the training like? Well, to give you a sense, here's one training video. It sets out a scenario of a ransomware attack at a hospital.
We knew it was something more. Then we found a message on a nurse technician's computer. It told us to follow a set of instructions if we wanted our data back.
Your computer has been infected. You have 6 days to pay 21.27 bitcoins to decrypt your data.
And we knew they could have accessed thousands of patient records. We had to reach out to authorities and experts on this matter.
You've been called in to respond. The victim is a hospital, and all indications point to a ransomware attack. Launch your incident response tools from an analyst workstation.
Of course, there's a lot more to training than the videos. WSJ Pro cybersecurity reporter James Rundall got to visit the center in Hoover, Alabama, and he's here now to tell us all about it. Hi, James. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Zoe. Happy to be here.
So we know the Secret Service does more than protect the president, but when it comes to cyber crimes, how important is the role they're taking?
Increasingly so. So the Secret Service has a kind of a dual mission. One is executive protection, which we know it for. The other is investigating financial crimes. So everything from bank fraud to wire fraud to everything else. And increasingly, all aspects of that have a cyber component to them, whether it's the actual crime taking place via hacking or whether it's transmission of money through digital means or something else.
So walk me through this training that they're now doing. What does it cover and who's taking part?
So the Secret Service has had this facility called the National Computer Forensics Institute, located just outside of Birmingham and Alabama, for around 14 years. But it's recently been kicking into high gear, and these guys cover all elements of digital evidence forensics, from analyzing computers through to more recently things like drones, increasingly things like cryptocurrency and everything else as well. Kind of everything that investigators might need to really get to grips with all kinds of digital crimes. But in addition to that, they also host special weeks, such as the one that I covered in October, where they brought around 300 law enforcement officers from around the country, National Guard, federal agents, and other people to really drill down on topics like ransomware, which the Biden administration is really taking seriously right now.
Can you tell me a little bit about how it got started? Because 14 years ago, we weren't really talking about cybercrime all that much.
We weren't, although it did exist. And what states and local governments found was that there was a growing mountain of digital evidence they needed to process. But the only people who could really handle it were the Federal Bureau of Investigation and a handful of specialists around the country. And their labs were getting swamped with requests to process this. And it was taking months sometimes to get evidence, get forensics back and everything else. So the state of Alabama kind of approached the Secret Service and said, hey, we've got some space in Hoover. We'd love for you guys to train our law enforcement officers in how to do this themselves. And the Secret Service was keen, but obviously there are federal agencies that said, fine, we can do this, but we have to train people from every state. And that's kind of how it got rolling. And in the first year, which was 2008, the first academic year, they had a relatively small budget and trained about 200 officers. Fast forward to today, they've gone from $4 million budget to over 30 million, and their trainings of over 3,500 per year.
So a lot more people getting involved and learning these things. But I feel like we still talk about ransomware attacks mostly. I mean, certainly on this show, we've covered a lot of ransomware attacks. There is a lot more to cybercrime, though, isn't there?
There is. Ransomware gets the headlines because it's disruptive, right? You think about Colonial Pipeline back in May that really affected gas prices on the East Coast. You think about things like JBS, where food prices might be affected by that happening. It's very in your face, very attention grabbing. But ransomware is not actually the real destructive force in cybercrime. The FBI released stats showing that things like business email compromise siphon billions away from American corporations. You get things like, even on a personal level, cyber stalking, harassment. Basically, any crime that has a digital component can be classified as a cybercrime. It's not just ransomware. One of the people I interviewed was Jeremy Sheridan, the assistant director for the Office of Investigations at the Secret Service, and here's how he put it.
From our perspective, there is no element of criminality anymore that isn't cybercrime. Whether it's the opportunity to commit the crime, the methods to execute it, the means to profit from it, it all involves, you know, some element of cyber. And that's why it's so important for us to have the NCFI, to have partnerships across all of government, because it is so wide-reaching and so pervasive that and so much work to go around that we all have to have a hand in it.
So talk to me about how these law enforcement officers are learning how to deal with some of these other cyber crimes that aren't ransomware.
Sure. The NCFI hosts a number of courses from everything through to really getting to grips with network intrusion and how to detect hackers on networks, which is more applicable to ransomware and other crimes, through to things like learning how to repair mobile devices. I mean, if you think about it, when the police raid a criminal hideout, the first thing they do is break their phones, right, or their tablets. So they have to learn how to piece them back together to recover evidence. As I said, increasingly, they're looking at things like drones as well, which are being used to airlift items into prisons. There was an example in 2018 with a Pennsylvania man who used a drone to drop pipe bombs on his ex-girlfriend's house over the course of 18 months. I mean, no one was hurt, but, you know, it's that kind of issue that frontline law enforcement officers are now dealing with, which they haven't necessarily been trained for in the past.
You know, learning about the kind of training that they're getting, it sort of reminded me of how law enforcement are taught to deal with, you know, terrorist attacks or, you know, war scenarios where there's all of these different agencies that have to learn about it. They're all working together. I mean, is that a good comparison? How does this compare to other law enforcement trainings?
I think so, especially with the way that cybercrime has now been elevated by the Biden administration to the level of a national security threat. You're now starting to see, you know, previously it was the FBI who would be the lead agency on it and maybe elements of the Department of Homeland Security, like CISA. Now, increasingly, you're seeing the Justice Department, you're seeing Treasury, you're seeing the Energy Department, Commerce, all the State Department, all these levers of government sort of coming together to respond to it in a way that is very analogous to how government responds to terrorism and other threats as well.
And how effective is the training? I mean, how much do these law enforcement officers use this?
Pretty effective, from what I gather from people I spoke to on the ground in Alabama last month. You know, on a physical level, the NCFI not only trains them, it gives them equipment as well, which can serve as a mobile forensics lab, which for many of these departments is beyond them in terms of resources and finance to do themselves. So that's a huge benefit to them. But on a more practical sense, I spoke with one gentleman called Devin King, who works for the Louisiana State Police, who took the network intrusion course and then 2 months later was the lead investigator on the ransomware attack that struck, you know, several school districts in Louisiana back in 2019. So that's a case of this training being put into practice sort of almost immediately, straight afterwards.
That's great. Always good when something you learn is immediately useful. All right. That was our WSJ Pro reporter, James Rundle. James, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And that's it for Tech News Briefing this week. Our producer is Julie Chang. Our supervising producer is Chris Zinsley. Our executive producer is Kateri Yoakum. And I'm your host, Zoe Thomas. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.